I wanted to make other kids find that superhero within themselves. My purpose was found in my wounds. Every kid has a voice, but they just don't have a platform to be heard.
Welcome to Venture Visionaries. I'm your host, Thomas Igeme. And today we will be speaking with Isaiah Dahl, the founder and CEO of ID Know Yourself. Isaiah's journey is one of profound resilience and unwavering dedication, not just to building a business, but to transforming the lives of Aboriginal children in out-of-home care in Australia. Isaiah Dahl is a Buchula and Garawa Aboriginal man who has experienced firsthand the challenges of the foster care system in Australia. Growing up, Isaiah faced immense hardships, moving through 17 different foster homes and experiencing daily violence and abuse. These experiences left him with a deep sense of loneliness and a lack of belonging, a feeling that many Aboriginal children in out-of-home care share. But Isaiah didn't just sit on these feelings. Like so many of the entrepreneurs we feature on this show, he took those obstacles and turned them into the determination and resilience to found ID Know Yourself, a mentoring organization aimed at empowering Aboriginal youth to find strength and hope within themselves. ID Know Yourself's vision is a world where all Aboriginal young people feel like they belong. The organization provides group sessions, one-on-one mentoring, cultural camps, education support, life skills training, and pathways to employment. And that holistic approach ensures that each child is supported in developing a healthy mind, body, and spirit, fostering a strong sense of cultural identity and community. And to truly appreciate the significance of Isaiah's work, it's important to understand a key feature of Australian Aboriginal history. Now, Aboriginal Australians are the world's oldest continuous culture, with a history dating back over 65,000 years. They possess rich traditions, languages, and knowledge systems that are deeply connected to the land. However, the arrival of European settlers in the late 18th century marked the beginning of profound disruptions to Aboriginal societies. Colonization brought with it violence, displacement, and policies aimed at assimilating Aboriginal people into Western culture to the detriment of their own. And one of the most devastating policies was the forced removal of Aboriginal children from their families, known as the Stolen Generations. From the late 1800s to the 1970s, thousands of Aboriginal children were taken from their homes and placed in institutions or with non-Aboriginal families. This policy aimed to assimilate the children into mainstream Australian society by eradicating Aboriginal culture. Now, the assimilation didn't really happen. The eradication did, and with it lasting trauma and a deep loss of identity. And it is within this context that Australia's current foster care system has to exist. It's shed a lot of its original aims of eradicating Aboriginal culture, but it still exists within this milieu of deep trauma and loss of identity. And so Isaiah's organization, ID Know Yourself, addresses the legacy of these historical injustices by providing Aboriginal children in out-of-home care with the support, mentorship, and cultural connections that they need to thrive. The organization's programs are designed to help young people develop a strong sense of identity, cultural pride, and the skills necessary to lead successful, independent lives. The work of ID Know Yourself has been recognized at the state and increasingly national level, and Isaiah has been particularly successful at galvanizing the business community in providing paths to employment for the youth in their programs. In today's episode, Isaiah shares his personal journey from a challenging childhood in the foster care system to becoming a leader and advocate for Aboriginal youth. We explore the transformative work of ID Know Yourself, its impact on the lives of many young people, and the advocacy initiatives aimed at driving policy changes to better support Aboriginal children. Isaiah also reflects on his leadership philosophy, the importance of community and cultural connections, and his vision for the future of the organization. Join us as we delve into the inspiring story of Isaiah Dahl, who joins the 65,000-year legacy of his ancestors, and in so doing, creating a brighter future for Aboriginal children in Australia. Let's dive in. I'd love it if you could just tell me a little bit more about your personal journey. What led you to start ID Know Yourself?
Yeah, thank you for having me here. I feel so privileged and honored to connect with you. And, you know, to tell my story, I have to take you back to, you know, when I was born in Australia. I was removed from my biological parents from a very young age. I was taken into the out-of-home care and child protection system. I grew up, you know, in foster care, and I bounced from home to home, you know, foster home to foster home, never really feeling like I belonged anywhere. And I felt like I didn't have, you know, a sense of direction and support. You know, grew up in a lot of broken homes. I was just trying to find myself. And it was just incredibly hard because I was told all these stories about my family, and I believed they were true. I mean, you know, brainwashed from a very young age. And some of those things were like, my family didn't want me. And I didn't really have that sense of connection to people or place. Hard to feel, you know, a sense of belonging in where I was growing up in these foster homes. I always felt I was a stranger living in one of these homes that I was taken to. So, you know, after going through, for 18 years of my life, I was in care and I went through multiple homes. I had the worst experiences. You know, I grew up where I'd come home from school and I'd drop my bags down and I would have foster carers getting inches away from my face. And it's, Isaiah, you're a nobody. That's why you're in foster care. You're going to end up in jail just like them. I was told that quite regularly as a kid. So the thing that used to help me though, as I was growing up in care, was my earliest childhood memory, where this kind of story also is partly why I got into the home care system and started my organization supporting Aboriginal kids who were just like me. First child memory when I was 5, I was in the Western Sydney Caravan Park. I don't know, remember what was said that day, but I remember how I felt. And I felt incredibly angry and frustrated. And I just had a lot of hate. I went out to this field of grass. I was kicking these rocks on the ground. And eventually I come across this old ruggedy tennis ball. It was faded out in its color, lost its yellow tinge to it. And I grabbed the tennis ball and threw it as hard as I could to the sky. And for the next half an hour, I looked absolutely everywhere for this tennis ball. I had come up with the most empowering belief at just 5 years old, and that was that I must be a superhero and that I've got superhuman strength. So when I was growing up, I used to think about that time when I was 5 years old, and that's the thing that gave me a lot of hope and strength during those most difficult experiences that I was exposed to. And after, you know, feeling like a superhero, I wanted to make other kids find that superhero within themselves as well. And that's where I started the organization, ID Know Yourself.
From your experience, what do you think is really broken kind of with the foster care system? And maybe in particular, what do you wish those of us who haven't had experience with it actually understood about what it is like to be in foster care?
I think about two things on that question. That is like loneliness. The feeling of growing up in care is lonely. Feel like you don't have anyone. I guess you've taken away from, you know, the role models or people who instill the values and tell you who you are, your identity. They make up your identity. You feel quite lonely when you're separated or removed from that. And that's what I felt a lot of my time growing up. I just felt like, you know, I was alone. You know, I had times as well when I was growing up of, you know, just ending it. I didn't really feel like I, as much as I remind myself of having that hope, at the same time, you know, it's quite hard to have hope when it's terribly challenging. It's easy to have it when everything's great. But for me, it was terribly difficult, feeling lonely. But the other aspect I think that is the opposite that the system needs is relationships, instilling great relationships for the kids in which we, who are in the out-of-home care, child protection, foster care system. I really, truly believe that is the recipe to help support the kids, give them that sense of belonging. I think about our organization and the work that we do, and the thing that underpins our programs and the activities that we run with our Aboriginal children is relationships. That's, we always talk about it. And there's an old saying, you know, the quality of your life can be determined upon the quality of your relationships. So having quality relationships is really going to help support our kids to the next level. Because you're right, you know, when I was growing up, I had a lot of foster carers who did it for the money. And you tell, it was a lot of the talk that was happening.
Yeah.
You know, when the money isn't gone to providing resources or support to you as a kid, you know they're probably not in it for the best reasons.
Could you walk me through how you go from kind of 18-year-old Isaiah, kind of just out of foster care, to Isaiah founding ID Know Yourself? And who are the folks who ended up being impactful along that way?
When I was 17, you know, the really pivotal time going into from adolescence to adulthood, I kind of hit ground bottom. Didn't have all the resources or support as I was leaving and transitioning from out-of-home care into, you know, independent living. And in fact, I was 17. I was living at school, at a boarding school in Sydney, and I lived in the country town. So we would catch the boarding school bus back to school before the term start. And when I was traveling back, I got a text message from my carer, and it read, "Pick up your bags from foster care. You're no longer welcome here." You know, after 5 years living with this family, I was kind of kicked out and back to square one. I didn't know what that means. And that means that I'm going to be even more away from any type of support because I got no carers. I don't have a caseworker. Back to loneliness again. In that time, I did struggle and I kind of couch surfed wherever I could, went to different places. I think in those darkest times, that's when I also gained a lot of support from the community and like people just allowing me to stay on their couch. And it was actually during those tough times. And that's why I always say my purpose was found in my wounds, sleeping tough and rough. And I actually met some other Aboriginal kids who were in out-of-home care and I was in foster care and they were Aboriginal. And they just reminded me of my younger self. And so I started to volunteer and take them to sports games and, you know, be there because I know what it felt like, you know, being on the sports field. And even though you've scored the most points and you look into the stadium and there's no one there cheering you on or celebrating you or, you know, sharing those special moments with you in your childhood, you know, I remember those times where you could score the most tries. I played rugby as well as a young kid and I'd score the most tries every game. And I would hope that, you know, my foster carer would be there and like see or witness, you know, what I achieved. And fortunately, that never happened. I might have scored the most tries, but I look around at the other kids and they're celebrated by their families. I used to do it for a lot of the kids, just go help them in small ways that I knew made the big difference. And so I found my purpose through that. And I was so passionate, right, to use my negative experiences for a positive and make that change and to break that cycle for these young children. So that's when I started to connect with a few different elders as well, Aboriginal elders, and told them, you know, my story. I told them why I wanted to do this. And I guess they kind of helped me establish the how and what to do. And they connected me with people and some of them let me stay at their place as well. And I had said to someone actually as well from the community and said, "How do you even go about setting up an organization?" And they were running one as well. And he said to me, you know, get post-it notes and just write out all your components and your outcomes. And anyways, eventually I did that and my whole room was just scattered. I was standing up like 2 a.m. at night, you know, building the website from scratch and post-it notes on components. And I realized through that as well, I was like, well, if I'm going to start something, I really actually ask the experts. And that was the kids that I was supporting. And I said to them, like, what would really change your trajectory and your future? And like, what does that look and feel like to you? And let's create this together. And that whole framework of relationships and culture and life skills, education, employment, you know, those are the kind of pillars that we built together. And it was that holistic approach to mentoring rather than just one thing. You know, we don't want our kids to just be successful. We want them to be fulfilled. So to meet their needs, we've got to look at a, you know, broad range of different areas that overall provide a quality of life. So it was hard. You know, I had all the ideas But then the other side of that is action, right? Knock on the door of the department and the system that failed me as a kid to go back in it and save these children. It was hard, and I got a lot of no's, but I kept showing up. I eventually was able to get it off the ground, and we started supporting 12 kids. Some of the kids as well come from, you know, really, really tough backgrounds and involved in the juvenile justice system. So they'll referred from the children's courts, and they get kind of allocated to our program to get that support. So we started with one other mentor and myself, 12 kids, kind of flash forward to where we are today. We've supported over 200 kids. We've got a team of 16 team members. So, you know, we've got 11 permanent staff, and we've got around 5 volunteers supporting us. And we've just got our new space, and we're really on this, you know, next phase of growth, which is an impact, which is absolutely phenomenal.
You've walked us through some of the pillars, right, that really underpin what you're doing with ID Know Yourself, things like relationships, employment, education. I'd love an in-depth look into some of the key programs you guys are offering and how you think they're being particularly transformative.
The way in which we run our programs is, you know, such a holistic approach. Like I was saying, so we support the kids with culture, connections. We bring in cultural educators as well, Aboriginal people in different businesses as well. So, you know, looking to create opportunities for them to then give back to our kids. Every school term, we're looking at doing a cultural camp. We've already been on 2 already. And that's an amazing way for our kids to connect back to places of belonging, you know, their traditional country. Take your shoes off and dig them in the dirt and dance on country, you know, learn their traditional language, and also to be able to, you know, try native bush foods. And, you know, it's that whole kind of spiritual connection to stories and places of belonging and, you know, that community. So that's what we have really started to focus on lately as well, because a lot of Aboriginal kids in care, they don't have that cultural connection. They're removed from their family, who usually teaches your culture, right, and keeps it alive for you. Although what you take from that, it's hard. And a lot of kids are also placed with non-Indigenous carers as well. They just don't have that connection. And then they've got social workers who are also non-Indigenous. So the people around them can't really connect them. So we play a part in just connecting them to different people and culture. So culture is a big pillar. Education, so, you know, school retention, their behavior at school, to get them to actually finish high school as well. That's really important. And because, you know, Aboriginal kids in care are more likely to end up in the juvenile justice system than to actually finish school. So if we can get them to finish school, that's going to enable them to progress and have future opportunities. So that's another really important one. And then life skills. So, you know, teaching our kids independence. We're just at their, but see, obviously I'm here in the US at the moment, but I'm connecting back home, and the team is still driving forward with the kitchen that we're building. So I think when I get back in the next couple of weeks, it will be built, and that's going to be a place where we will cook with the kids and teach them, you know, independence and life skills on how to cook a nutritious and delicious meal with, you know, a few basic items and do it at a cheap way instead of getting takeout and fast food, you know, actually getting them to learn these skills from a young age. And we've always done that in spaces we've been in. Kids love cooking, and it just, you know, it's a great place for people to just connect. We say, you know, yarn means you have a conversation, casual conversation. And employment, so looking at creating opportunities with some of our corporate partners and local businesses to give our kids an opportunity to get their foot in the door, to gain some really transferable skills and experiences so they can become more valuable in the marketplace. And so when they learn how to get into a routine, to plan, to have goals, to build their communication skills, it's those things that you don't really get taught. We want to get them prepared so when they go into a job or into a career, they've got the foundations laid down. One-on-one sessions, that's where we do that goal setting, life skills support, and we run group sessions. So we have up to 15 to 20 kids at a time, and we'll run these different workshops around culture, education, employment, and building that collective relationship and community at ID Know Yourself. And our vision for ID is that we want to create a world where all Aboriginal children feel as though that they belong.
Do you have any particular story of like a particular kid who comes to mind from the last couple of years that you feel is a real success story about the power of ID Know Yourself that you feel comfortable sharing with us?
There's many. I'll choose the most recent. You know, it was a young boy who, I remember him coming to the program, it was a few years ago, and you know, I remember him being quite shy and not really participating in the programs. And we were also told by his caseworker at the time that, you know, he just wasn't engaging in different programs, and they didn't know if he would want to continue on and participate in the programs. And so, you know, over time, I think we worked really, really hard to subtly, you know, every now and then, you know, check in with them and get them to participate in the programs. And I think it took about like 6 months for them to actually, you know, warm up to us and start engaging. And they didn't really know too much about their culture. They didn't know what they wanted to do in life. Over that course of the 6 months, we did, you know, we started to see that change afterwards. And, you know, young person had come from, you know, being a shy, kind of timid, not participating in the programs, and then blossoming and, you know, really engaging. And he started to become a leader within the sessions as well, and help support the other kids and get them to engage. And he also connected with his culture. He becomes so proud who he was and where he was from, and his confidence was just oozing out of him. You know, he never really looked you in the eye, and now he's looking in the eye. He was telling stories. He was engaging other kids and supporting them. And it was just beautiful to see that transformation that he had. He then wanted to gain some employment as well. And so we had a relationship with one of our partners called Sydney Airport. So like the airport at Sydney, and he's just started his electrical apprenticeship 2 months ago. He's loving it.
Thank you for that. It really kind of brings to life the impact and importance of what you're doing. How would you define your leadership philosophy as you look back over the last 5 years? What, in your opinion, does it take to make a truly great leader? And how do you strive to embody those qualities?
I honestly kind of jumped straight into, you know, yeah, building the company. And before I knew it, I had, you know, people looking to me for guidance and support. Yeah. And I never really considered myself as well a leader. I definitely wasn't sports captain or school captain, or it was ever the person that people would come to for advice, right? Like I grew up where I was often kind of like, you know, the class clown, and it was quite foreign. And I definitely think that, you know, my philosophy for leadership is being one, is servant leadership, you know, making sure that others do better than you could ever do, and making sure that you are consistently showing up, empowering the team for them to be able to feel as though they belong and have that purpose and can come to you for direction at times. And, you know, it's that real, really does take a community to support a child. And I think about our organization like that, you know, the stronger that we are with our relationships that we have between us, you know, the stronger that's going to transcend to our children and give them that sense of relationship and community as well. So I really value as well as a leader growth and looking at opportunities that I can, I guess, you know, get a different perspective and make sure that I am constantly trying to become more so I can give more to our team. And I have, you know, gone through so many different courses of leadership, and something that I really think is a privilege. And, you know, being in the positions that we're in is such a privilege. And I even heard once before that pressure is a privilege. You know, having that pressure within the organization, it really is, because, you know, I absolutely honor our amazing team. They, you know, consistently show up day in, day out. And I'm always kind of, you know, hoping to be the person that's cheering people on in the corner and making sure that, you know, we can together collectively overcome whatever stands in front of us. You know, I've gone to just, you know, with that kind of growth as well, I've got many different coaches and people that I'm inspired by, that I try and gain as much information and knowledge and experiences through them, but then I can also bring that back to our team and love being in the position I'm in.
It is a privilege, but it is one that you've handled well. I know you were nominated for the New South Wales Young Australian of the Year and the Sydney Inner West 30 Most Influential People Under 30. How, if at all, did that kind of recognition impact you and your work?
It was an absolute honor. You know, we don't do the work that we do for awards, but to, you know, and sometimes, you know, in the spaces that we're in, you don't often get recognized. I think this is just a testament to people that I'm so fortunate to share this journey with, surround myself with. I think it's a recognition of, it's not just me. It's actually, you know, the people in my community. It's the, you know, the family and the friends, and it's those around me who have kind of, you know, strengthened me as a person and built my character. I think it's also acknowledgement of them. In that spirit, it was really a shock, I think. I kind of got announced that I was nominated, and in a West as well. That was someone who told me in the newspaper. I found it in weird ways, you know, like, yeah, it's just a really, really beautiful thing to have. And it does just emphasize the importance of the work that we do, and that there is a real need and desire to support Aboriginal children in out-of-home care. I think it also, you know, recognized and highlighted that, which is really amazing. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of talk in the out-of-home care and child protection system about giving our kids a voice. Although I just don't think that's right, because, you know, every kid has a voice, but they just don't have a platform to be heard. But I feel as though part of this, the recognition as well, with some of the awards and things, it's given us a bit more of a platform to be heard. That ultimately gives us a lot more strength when advocating for our kids.
As we look ahead to the next 5 years of ID Know Yourself, what do you hope will be true about the organization 5 years from now that is not true today?
When I think about the next 5 years, I think about furthering our impact. We've impacted and changed so many lives. The team have worked tirelessly to put our kids in the best positions that they possibly can, so they can break that cycle of intergenerational trauma and disadvantage, and ultimately, you know, have that sense of belonging. We've kind of gone through phases, right? Like, you know, business is an evolving thing as well. It's something that consistently needs to grow. Even just lately, we've even just kind of looked internally a little bit and unpacked, like, who is our ideal client? Like, let's get granular on that. It might sound silly, you know, like, who's our ideal client? Well, obviously, Aboriginal children in care. But we went to the finer details around age and background and really understanding what our skill set and capabilities and experiences were, and how does that match and support our kid the best way we can. And so we've kind of gone through this, you know, period of evolution and change, and it's been hard. It has been definitely hard, and the team have been amazing to, you know, persevere, and we've grown through it together. And, you know, I think about this next 5 years, and the last 5 years, to tell that story, I think the last 5 years have been about quantity, like, you know, a lot of movement, rapid, fast change. And I think the next 5 years will just be more about slowing things down and focusing on, rather than quantity, it'll be focusing on quality of work. You know, real, I think I've realized over time, everything's in the finer details, and that you can do small things right. Well, then you can do the big things right. So when we're looking at literally changing lives of thousands of Aboriginal children in out-of-home care and foster care in Australia, and we have to do that with quality. And I also think that it's one child at a time. You know, it's one child at a time that we're supporting and servicing and breaking that cycle with. And that will have a ripple effect within that children's life, but then also their siblings, their family, their community, and as a whole nation. If we can focus on the quality, one child, one kid at a time, I think, you know, the future will be much brighter. So we've gone kind of quite quickly over time, and I think just bringing back that quality of work is going to be most important, and how we share that with our, in between our team, our community, and also with our partners as well, who are on this mission of change with us.
As you look ahead over the next 5 years, and you think about where you're hoping to take ID Know Yourself, what is a strength you have now that you hope you don't lose over the next 5 years? And what is perhaps a strength you don't think you yet have that you hope will truly be yours in 5 years based on where you want to take the organization?
The thing I do really well is communication. I feel like I'm good at that. I like to tell stories. And like,
I agree.
I do really value it. I think it's if you can tell a story, you can, you know, change people's lives. And then also culturally, you know, storytelling has always been our, you know, most valuable resource, you know, as Aboriginal people in Australia. We never wrote anything down. It was all, you know, verbal, and it was through these stories, right? Even just like, you know, that's why I love it about it. It's a transformational, it's a way that we can connect with each other and create belonging through the words that we use, and it can provide hope, inspiration, motivation. It can change your life. I think something that I need to work on is just patience. And I think that stems to that whole quality framework that I was talking about as well, is slowing it down and just being patient, not trying to get places quickly or fast. It's about experiencing everything as a whole and not just, you know, rapid kind of thing.
What are some of the key advocacy initiatives or other things that are going on around the world of ID Know Yourself that you are hoping move forward so that your work is more powerful or the people that you serve are better served?
So as an organization, that's something that we probably have an indirect support to policy. We haven't directly pointed out things and said, you know, this needs to change. It's something that as an organization and part of our strategy, just recently 2 year strategy was to play more of a role within that advocacy piece. And as I was saying earlier, you know, every kid has a voice, but just to have a platform to be heard. We want to be that platform, and, you know, we have the experts and we can check in with the kids and their families and understand what do they really need. And we'll listen and try and take that and give that to our partners and government, who really just, I guess, find it troubling and hard at times to find the answers. We can help change that world for the kids collectively. I've realized that over the time, like, you know, to change the system, you have to be a part of it. But connecting the kids and, you know, their stories to our mission and having our partners also be included along the way, that's the only way to change it for everyone. The things as well that as we go down this path of advocacy that I'm looking forward to is actually understanding like how are carers determined to be fit and best suited to support the kids' needs. I look at that whole kind of experience that I had when I was growing up. I had, you know, absolutely terrible people, horrible people who weren't in it for the right reasons. And I think about my time when I was in care. I used to ask myself that question. I was like, why are these people in the positions that they're in? Like, you know, what were the processes and the steps to become a carer? It seemed when I was a kid, it was, you know, you put your hand up and you literally just get chosen from the crowd. For me, it's that going back into understanding what is the policies around how carers are allocated, you know, children to support, and what training do they need, or, you know, what qualifications and experiences do they need? Because you're literally in a position where you're going to be supporting one of the most vulnerable children. You better be able to, you're going to support them in the best way you can and prove it. That's something that I'm focusing on. I think just like the truth telling as well. That needs to be more transparent within the whole of Australia as well. That's about the other advocacy piece I'm trying to play, is like tell stories of my experiences, and hopefully, you know, our kids can as well, and our team, and, you know, as an organization, we can kind of get the word out, because a lot of people think that the stolen generation, what we had in Australia, where Aboriginal people were taken away from their families and taken to missions and places where there were a lot of injustice and, you know, taken away from their culture. It's something that a lot of Australia isn't prone and don't have understanding on, I think, because people think that a stolen generation happened a long time ago, but there's, you know, thousands of children who've been removed. There's over 24,000 Aboriginal kids in elder care in Australia, when they only constitute for around, you know, 6% of the Australian population, but we've got a mere 50% of kids in the system. It's shocking. So getting those stories out is really important, I think, for policy change and how kids are actually being removed and what is the determining factors of the kid being removed. And is there some sort of, you know, prevention that we can put in place and preservation of keeping, you know, the children and their families together so the kid doesn't have to go into the system? And kind of that whole prevention piece, I think that's something that we need to focus on. As they're like, you know, rates of removal have pretty much tripled since the stolen generation. So we need to like focus on that prevention piece and restoration and preservation. I think the other aspect as well is just the quality of the kids' lives as well. And as a program, I think we do that really well. But the system, they need to also look at quality as well and how they are providing quality of care and support. And what does that look like and mean for every individual family and child, Aboriginal child in our home care? Because, you know, it's not working. In Australia, we had this, you know, policy change where it was instead of kids finishing up in the system at 18, they extended it to 21 so they could, you know, have resources and support. And I mean, look, it's a first step. It's that's good intention. I would like to understand, you know, what has that provided quality of care and life because they've just extended the time period. I'm not certain on that. So rather than focusing on, you know, expanding the age in the out-of-home care system, which we already know is broken and isn't providing quality of life, this doesn't change much. So I think the quality is something that has been standing out for me and as well, I've been sharing it a fair bit today.
As you kind of take a step back and think about the work that ID Know Yourself is doing, if there's one thing that you're hoping listeners take away from our conversation today, what is it?
If someone's take something away from today's yarn, would be around the quality of relationships that we provide to children. I truly believe, and in my heart, that the way to change the trajectory and the future in a positive way for Aboriginal children in out-of-home care is creating positive relationships around them, you know, sense of community and that sense of belonging. That's going to have a tremendous amount of impact on our children is the relationships. You're a product of your environment and who you hang around with is who you become. And so the more positive people we can have to inspire and give hope and, you know, be role models and mentors and coaches and help instill powerful stories and values and connecting them to their culture. I truly believe that's the tool that's going to help set our children free.
It's difficult to describe just how inspiring it is to meet Isaiah Daw in person and see this still relatively young person make such strides to make the world a better place for his community. As I reflect on his work and the work of the many people who support ID Know Yourself, I'm reminded of the wise words of Dr. Lila Watson. Dr. Watson is a visual artist, activist, and academic working in the field of women's issues and Aboriginal epistemology. She's also a Gungulu woman who grew up in the Dawson River region of central Queensland. And she says, if you have come here to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. I am so inspired by people like Dr. Watson and Isaiah Daw who invite us to join them in the work together because all our liberation is bound together.